citizens used to have from the governmental abuses. Most citizens know that these abuses are serious violations of their constitutional rights, but individually, we are powerless against the entire monolithic government structure. It is also becoming clear that the courts and legal profession have been thoroughly corrupted by money and political pressure. If you tell a lawyer you've been accused of murder, he will consider representing you in court if you can afford his fee. If you tell a lawyer you got an unfair traffic ticket, he will look at you like you just arrived from Mars and tell you he doesn't handle those cases. Judges on the bench will tell you that you do not have a right to a jury trial for minor offenses, even though it may cost you thousands of dollars. They all believe they can ignore the Seventh Amendment with impunity. Why? We've been working, and you're going to hear a little bit later in the show an interview with Theodore Carey, who's working with B.E. Smith, kind of a constitutionalist up in, was it Shasta or Trinity Counties, I can never remember which, running for sheriff. Actually, now I'm not sure if he's going to be able to do that because they've ruled you have to be a police officer to actually run for sheriff or some kind of fancy degree in criminology. But he has successfully told people, sheriffs who stop him on the roadways for things like tail light out, that take me to a magistrate. And as a consequence, they've stopped stopping him because he's said he's willing to go to jail and then deal with the consequences and then do a civil lawsuit afterward. And some people in Santa Cruz are pursuing the same alternative. Another letter that appeared that was interesting. Wow. You know, I think it was in...
Good Times.
Was it in the Good Times? There's a long letter from... Well, there's a letter about Kennedy and Eric Larson and the... I wasn't able to find it in that issue about the question of the beach flats. We've covered the beach flats a bit. Actually, we've covered the beach flats a bit, and there has been some public statements by Councilmember Scott Kennedy, working on the plan. Actually, he's attacking Phil Baer and attacking other folks in the beach flats, and we've heard some criticism of Eric Larson and Kennedy around the Resource Center for Nonviolence for a proposed sort of an informant plan, which we'd like to hear about.
They've become violent meetings. They've become violent in public. Both of them really need to get a little handle on themselves. You know, democracy and participation requires...
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good evening.
Hi, caller.
I called when I heard you mention the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Uh-huh.
But I have a story about... parking tickets too, if you're interested.
Oh, please tell me. I think I recognize your voice. Sounds like Linda LeMaster. You ran for city council in 1992, and you've been active in politics here in Santa Cruz for over two decades.
Yeah, in 92 they were talking about it'd be okay to have a pogonip garden and an urban garden at the same time, but now we have neither.
Yeah, well, I've been concerned about that too, and I didn't stay for the entire pogonip debate, but what I noticed and mentioned before was that there was no mention whatsoever of the of a homeless campground in the pogonip plan, which I found to be a blatant sellout by people even like Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, who were the ones who supposedly were running around trying to find a campground back in 1995 when Kennedy and Rotkin were closing down the Coral Street Open Air Shelter.
Yeah, I've had the impression, both from my personal chat with Celia Scott and with what I've heard her say publicly, that she would see that there'd be something up there in the terms of a campground, but I would, you know, I think people should be allowed to camp out there if they can contain their own waste, but I think that we need to focus on getting urban camping and a lot of it. I mean, more people are becoming homeless fast.
What do you mean by urban camping?
Nobody's dealing with it. I mean, nobody who has resources and land is dealing with it. They're talking about it a little.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing it.
What do you mean by urban camping?
Well, where people are is where people who are homeless need to be, at least part of the time. And that's my only point about, I don't know, the ideal for me would be to take the curfew off the parks and create a self-policing option for up to a certain number of people, depending on the size of the park, because they have bathrooms. I guess we'd have to have a new head of Parks and Rec, from what you were saying earlier on your show, to do this, but it would require nothing new.
You know, it's interesting because I recently spoke, and I don't know if you heard the show, with a fellow from the city manager's department in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Fort Lauderdale has been ordered by the federal courts, before it can close its parks at night, it had to set up a safe zone, mm-hmm. where homeless people could legally sleep, and what they did was they set up a zone around City Hall which has earned some criticism from homeless advocates. In fact, I'm hoping to get back to the Fort Lauderdale homeless activists and see what they have to say about this so-called safe zone. But it certainly is an improvement over the current situation in Santa Cruz and probably most cities in California, where no one has taken such a case to federal court to claim that if you're going to close the parks, you've got to open up somewhere in the city to make it legal for people to sleep.
I think at the rate the homeless population is growing, and some parts of that population are being harmed by having to be homeless, that's inevitable. If Santa Cruz isn't the place, it's the same as trying to get voting rights back a couple decades. You know, if it doesn't happen here all the way through the courts first, it is going to happen in this country. And you just can't throw out a fifth of the population and say, we don't need you anymore, we're going to stomp you to death, which is what our social policies boil down to.
A fifth of the population? You think it's that large?
I'm saying that's what it's becoming. I'm kind of looking at California. I don't know if it's like that nationally, but I'll bet it is like that at most urban centers.
Now, Linda, you've also been active in fighting welfare decapitation, and we've had a lot of predictions a couple years ago that this was going to result in the doubling of the number of homeless people on the streets and similar predictions, but do you think that's actually come to pass? Has the homeless population doubled because of the welfare and food stamp cuts and SSI cuts and so forth?
I think those projections were based on over the coming 5 years, not the first whole year it was in effect, but yeah, that's happening. I mean, we know the number of disabled children who have been cut off of their disability income because of the, I guess, pious attitude of certain Christian Republicans in Congress. Those are real statistics.
And plenty of Democrats, too.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing. I can't see them doing anything. Most of them. A few of them might be. Barbara Lee is an exception I can think of.
Barbara Lee.
Barbara Lee has proposed for this state a something called CalCare, and we should all call Bruce McPherson as soon as possible in case they dump and ask them not to dump this bill. And it would provide something like what Medi-Cal is now, except you don't have to be totally indigent to get it. You can be among the working poor and even middle class people, and it's a step toward universal health care. The governor has said he will support something like that for children but not adults, but this is actually a comprehensive bill that doesn't discriminate according to your age.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're frequently kind of a close observer of city council, Linda. Did you follow the Pelton Street property, the fluoride debate, the Parks and Rec, I guess, discussion around the Pogonip? Have you followed any of those issues? And do you have any comments on any of those?
I've been following the fluoride debate, and I don't need to make a comment. I'll just refer people to this week's dissent cartoon. I thought that was funny.
Ah, yes.
In general, I think that given a choice between having your poisons regulated and making choices for yourself, I guess I'm a liberal. I would rather decide whether me or my children should be ingesting fluoride and how much, or any other poison you want to name. That would be my position.
You also
leave it up to the state.
You also live several blocks from the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Uh-huh.
And you've been living in the, lower ocean area for several years, decades.
I think of this as the east side, sort of like downhill from the east side, but for bureaucratic purposes, the city and the government have started calling it the lower Ocean Street neighborhood.
Right, but you have been living there, and you know, you're probably aware of the controversy around the so-called U.S. Department of Justice grant to get the Resource Center working with the police department in terms of what some people call an informant network.
Or let's say, to pay them for working with the police department. Some of us feel that was already happening. Yeah, the main reason I called is I wanted to tell you and your listeners about a couple events that are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
April 18th, it's the Lower Ocean Neighborhood Cleanup, and I gather it's sponsored by the Resource Center for Nonviolence. 10 a.m., that's a Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the Resource Center's description. Join with residents of the Lower Ocean Street neighborhood for a neighborhood cleanup project. Activities will be focused around the Bixby Street side of the Sleep Tight Motel. Projects will include graffiti removal, weed abatement, sidewalk sweeping, scraping of gutters, and hauling of discarded furniture and other debris. A barbecue is scheduled to end the morning's events. For more information, call Eric.
Eric Larson.
423-1626.
Eric Larson is what Scott Kennedy's chosen successor for city council?
I don't know about that. I heard that Kennedy wasn't going to run again, and Eric's not going to run.
Mm.
at least in the upcoming election.
I'll believe that when I see it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it concerns me that they're attacking the back of the sleep-tight motel. I mean, I guess it is a mess there because actually that motel is housing. Like a lot of motels in town, it's a place where poor people who can't afford what housing really costs ends up. I have friends who had to live there for years because even when they finally waited it out and got to the top of the housing authority list to get a subsidy they were eligible for, they don't have a car. They couldn't find a landlord that would accept it. So they stayed stuck, a family of six, in this essentially one-bedroom motel. So, you know, given the history of litigation being one of the main mediums that the Resource Center and Eric Larson have used to clean up our neighborhood, I'm a little bit concerned, and I think there should be all kinds of people there, not just people who are already on the ticket or whatever. But here's another date. This is, you might, I'm hoping you could go to this, and I hope your listeners might be interested. Neighborhood Safety Community Forum. This is Wednesday, April 29th. 7:30, and it's at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. It says, a community forum about the Resource Center's neighborhood safety program and its emphasis on environmental strategies to reduce drug and alcohol-related problems. Again, for more information, call Eric. That's at 515 Broadway.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, go ahead.
I just hope this forum is a real community forum that, you know, the people who are concerned about having the police make all their decisions for them will be there too.
Well, we heard something about this, at least the issue of the Resource Center's taking this money from the Department of Justice, if that's where it's coming from, from Chris Jennings, who's of course been concerned about the Pelton Street property sellout by the City Council. And he's also been covering the Resource Center as well in terms of the, apparently Scott Kennedy and his allies there were able to pressure, I think it was Peter Lunsdale, is that his name?
Peter's one of the Resource Center guys?
He was, I guess first it had been Doug Rand and then Peter who had blocked this proposal and they were persuaded to remove their block under threat by Kennedy that he was going to pick up his marbles and go home. And again, I'm talking secondhand information because I have not yet been able to get folks to call back on this issue. They're running around doing a lot of things, trying to fight, you know, to get Pelton Street property back on track. That is to say, giving the voters an option to choose whether the city should sell this for a wealthy land development project or should allow the homeless garden project to continue there. They've already, of course, sold it to the folks, and the Pelton Street initiative has failed to make the ballot, according to the city clerk, even though they had, what, more than 5,500 signatures.
Wow.
They claim that almost half of them were invalid, and this matter may be taken to court. I'm not sure what they're doing. In fact, I think they're meeting next Monday. For folks who want to know more about that, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I will hopefully have the specifics of their Monday night meeting. They did not meet last Monday night as we thought they were going to. And so actually some of us are wandering around in a lower ocean area, in danger of getting attacked by graffiti artists and prostitutes. Who knows, you know, all those dangerous people or maybe the police officers who are watching them. Or maybe Eric Larson and his gang of vigilantes who can tell.
Or at risk of being offered a drink by a fake prostitute or
having smoke blown in our face by some arrogant smoker, who knows, you know, it's a, although that's another issue that will be coming up, I guess, at City Council next time.
Well, I guess since people might be listening, it's important to say about my area in this neighborhood, it's a lot less busy out in the streets than it was a few years ago.
Is that good or bad?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't buy street drugs. I'm fortunate enough to have Medi-Cal. That takes care of some of my medical needs, and I had to do without otherwise. And I don't make a living as a street worker. I don't have to do that, so...
You mean a sex worker on the streets?
Yeah. I don't, you know...
A prostitute, a hooker.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm
a woman
prostitute. I take welfare from the state, you know. That could be considered prostitution. Some of us consider marriage prostitution. I just don't have to go out on the sidewalk to do it.
Well, that's always an advantage.
You get paid for being a woman and a mother. This is worthy of a show of its own, but not tonight.
Well, listen, thank you, Linda. Anything else you want to add?
Well, I wanted to get in on what you're saying about the traffic tickets, because I just got a piece of mail yesterday I had been warned that on the 19th I'd be taken to small claims court for tickets. I haven't been able to keep up a deal I made with the city parking office.
Now, are these the tickets that you got for sleeping in your vehicle when you were homeless?
No, not sleeping. They're parking tickets. But most of them I got while I was homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And they accumulated when the law changed, because this used to be under the purview of the Department of Motor Vehicles, and suddenly it just sort of changed, and whoever issued the ticket was the one that was going to get the money, so supposedly, for the ticket getting paid for. But when these things sort of reverted back to the maker of the ticket, some of those municipalities or the county or whatever, they don't really have a system that even knows how to understand the rights you have, even when they give you a ticket. So, like you were saying, this is a real wallet ringer out mill, but I don't have anything in my wallet, so I'm in trouble.
Hmm.
And because they take you to small claims court, you can't ultimately work it off or get, or sweat it out in jail or something. You have no recourse. It's going to haunt you forever, I guess. But they took this thing to court on the 24th after notifying me they were going to do it on the 19th. So when I went up there looking for the chance to defend myself or at least explain that I'm judgment proof, I couldn't find it. And then I get this thing in the mail yesterday saying it's even more than I already owed. And it, to me, it's enraging because, one, they took my car. The car was worth more than that, well, before the court fees. And two, I was quite willing to work it off at less than my labor's worth, and there's no option to do it.
When they take your car, of course, the fines begin to mount at an exponential rate.
Oh, yeah. Now I'm going to have another, let's see, something like $70 a day for it sitting in an impound lot, and over $70 for when they get rid of it. I got a note from the towing company that picked it up saying that if I didn't sign title over to them, as if I'd given it to them, not the police department, there would be more fees to come, the legal fees of getting rid of it.
It's a major racket, I think, between what North County Tow and the police department and the city.
I think all the tow companies are in on this, and I think they have a fair alternating scheme. But for the victim, in my case, I consider myself and those who need to drive to stay alive or to keep their job, the victims, because this is all kind of the washing machine fallout of Prop 13 having passed, you know. Government doesn't know how to do its job without fleecing people nowadays.
Anything more you want to say before I move on?
Yeah, I want to take some sort of legal recourse to change the fact that there's no way but money to deal with old parking tickets, and if anybody else in radio listening land is interested in that, if we could get up the energy to do it, I want to be a part of it. That's it.
Do you want to leave your phone number?
Oh, gosh, my phone number is listed. I'll leave my name, Linda Lee Master.
Okay, did you, if anyone's interested and they don't define Linda Lee Master's name in the phone book, you can give me a call at the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or possibly listeners out there who've had difficult experiences with this parking ticket racket, or, you know, the general use of municipal ordinances to raise revenue for the city rather than to deal with real problems of the public safety, can give our guests a call here in the studio at 423-5361. Thanks, Linda.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Good show.
Thank you.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Our lines are open. We're going to take a brief musical break, and then we're going to turn to our next two guests, Tenants' Rights Union of Santa Cruz members Marco and Donna. Do you want to say something before we go into our musical break here?
We'll be able to take volunteers from a court referral, the people who want to work off their tickets or whatever they have time or money they have to work off with the court. They can work with the Tenants' Rights Union for free.
Excellent. Of course, that won't apply to Linda because it's a small claims action, and therefore it can't be done that way. But unless what?
Is she judgment proof?
Yeah. Possibly so. Maybe you can get in touch with Linda and talk to her about that. So let's stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz for more of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We've got another 45 minutes of Civil Rights for the Poor.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people. Slaves again, when the beating of your heart echoes the beating of the drums, there is a light.
stand up and take your chance. The blood of the martyrs will water the meadows of France.
Do you hear the people sing? Sing the song of angry men. Sing the music of the people who will not be saved again. When the beating of your heart settles the beating of the drum, there is a life about to suffer tomorrow.
And you're back with Free Radio Santa Cruz. And we have a phone guest here on the line with us. Is
hello?
Skidmark Bob.
Can you hear me? Okay.
I can hear you.
I think the phone patch is a little messed up. Or wait a minute, you're getting a little buzz there.
I am getting a buzz, it's true.
So why don't you, let's see, on the board,
mm-hmm.
if you reach behind it, there should be a wire going into where the phone jack goes in. There you go. How's
all
that?
Right.
Much better.
Hey, Dr. Robert here. Hey, always a pleasure to have you, Robert. Well, I was speaking about you earlier today. You went to court today, and I guess we did an interview with you, which we haven't yet aired. But the outcome of your milk crate hearing, I guess we can call it, where you were taken into court on a misdemeanor, up to $1,000. 6 months in jail.
Yes.
For having a milk crate.
Possession of a milk crate, yes.
And
565 of the Penal Code.
And you apparently, you were in Commissioner Cloud's court, and the district attorney was loath to try the case. He would have preferred simply to violate your probation with it. Oh. I guess you're on probation from an incident that happened back in 2 years ago with Campbell Street, where you peacefully resisted the government's, I guess it was the city's, colluding with a slumlord in destroying that property and not paying you and the other residents the fees you were entitled to for relocation. Mm-hmm. They took you to jail. You were accused of damaging or vandalism a police vehicle that you had video evidence that the vehicle had actually was previously damaged.
Yeah.
And I guess you pleaded to that charge, got probation, and now you have to pay back some $500 for this alleged vehicle damage.
$500 for that, and that was what I was on calendar for today, as well as. But first, when I got cited for 565 of the Penal Code, possession of a milk crate, and the reason why, going back to the whole thing when the police stopped me, which was Sergeant Butchie Baker, badge number 105. Sticky Fingers Baker.
Sticky Fingers Butchie, so called because of his complaints of 10 women about sexual misconduct while he was an officer in the early 90s.
This is true. Well, he works with this special group called the Community Service Section of the Santa Cruz Police. It's right here in his own police report, which is in front of me right now. And his assignment is to work with Police Officer House, badge number 171, in the department's Community-Oriented Policing and Problem-Solving Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And they go around taking shopping carts away from homeless people. And he says, okay, here in his report, he says, over the past couple of months, Police Officer House has a great deal of contact with local retail stores who provide shopping carts for their customers. The majority of the stores have serious problems with carts being taken off the property, despite the fact the carts are being clearly marked the store's name, in many cases a disclaimer indicating the violation of law to take the carts. In addition, the city of Santa Cruz has a major problem with these carts being abandoned throughout the city. I mean, they're everywhere. Police Officer Howe says they have been working with the stores to develop a program to get the carts returned to the stores, and so that's what they were doing at the time I saw them taking carts away and citing homeless people for being in possession of stolen property. And so I took a picture of them doing that and rode away from the scene. And he saw me taking the picture, got a little pissed off, and came on after me. And the only thing he could get me for was a milk crate being on the back of my bike. And
pretty serious offense there, Robert.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, see, when you have a milk crate, and everybody has them in their house. I mean, everybody has them. You find them laying on the side of the road. Well, every milk crate has a little identification on the side, and if they say Reg Cal, registered in California, like Berkeley Farms or whatever you may have in your house, then that means it's registered, and that's the lawful branding of a milk crate. And so if you possess that, you are in violation of the law. And, you know, I'll try to explain that to officer that everybody has one of these, or three or four or five of them, in their house. And, you know, I could turn you on to state's evidence, and everybody I know has one, you know, and they could get warrants, and they could raid people's
houses. You offered to turn snitch for the milk crack people, eh?
Well, he didn't want to take that, so I got a ticket, and he, the whole funny thing is his community service program that they're doing, and they also take fingerprints from kids at schools, which I found out that Officer Howes and Butchie Baker were up at the middle school, up on Westlake Middle School, I think it is, and just for kids' safety, they're taking their fingerprints, of course, and they're going to be on file, and of course, they give a file to the parents, too, in case your kid gets kidnapped or this or that, but your child can be fingerprinted, and that's part of their community services program.
You know, our station has been following the issue also of the use of gang profiles in Watsonville, and I guess here in Santa Cruz as well, where they're taking pictures and taking names and IDs of young people downtown who've committed no criminal offenses,
right,
putting them into a huge statewide database that then becomes a gang database.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you and I observed what may have been this process happening 2 days ago with Officer Over, who double-parked his car downtown.
And today.
At the Cathcart and Pacific, and was harassing, at least when I saw him, a young woman who told me she'd found a $20 bill on the sidewalk. He didn't give her a ticket. He didn't arrest her. He simply took her picture.
Uh-huh.
And I should have advised her at the time, and I'd advise everyone listening, you do not have to consent to anything of the sort. If a police officer wants to take your picture for some kind of database, that's illegal behavior unless you are being properly arrested and taken into custody. You cannot simply be photographed at their whim. Unless you give your consent, then they can do whatever they want. Now, while it's true that anybody could take anybody's picture in public, when police officers take your picture and it becomes a part of a database, that is something considerably different, because it puts you in a position where anybody you associate with then can become a part of the database, stays on file for 5 years, and can be a very, very serious thing and affect your employment prospects and so forth.
Uh-huh.
So it's no minor activity what Officer Over, who I point out is Killer Carey's comrade. Over was the man who was with Officer Carey when he shot Happy John Dine dead with two shots to the gut in November of 1997, a fact still ignored by our police department, our police review board, and our city council.
Well, what they were doing there, Robert,
mm-hmm.
Yesterday and also today, is they were doing what they called an FI, or field investigation, where they take down the ID of this person that, of course, just bought drugs from, or just sold something to an undercover officer, that the net team just sent in by, who's the head of it now, Sergeant McMahon, badge number 109. And what she does is, you know, they send in an undercover officer with the whole wire and everything, and they walk in and they find somebody that'll, you know, sell them some pot for $10 or something like that, or 20 bag or this or that. And so they walk around the corner and they make their deal. And so this girl got away after that, and she was walking down the street. And so then they say, send in the uniform officer. So Officer Over and I don't know who the other officer was, but they pull her over and they do an FI on her. And then they take this information, they go to the DA, they get a warrant, and then they come back whenever they want to pick this person up for a warrant.
Oh, I see. So the officers, the undercover officers, don't have to expose themselves?
No.
I see.
They have a couple ways of doing it, but around this time every year they do the same thing.
Well, the whole drug war, as you know, is a completely bogus attack on civil liberties, on public sensibilities,
mm-hmm.
on the civilian state. I mean, it's a police state activity.
Oh, yeah.
It has nothing to do with public safety whatsoever. It has to do with generating funding for police departments.
The drug czars come out and said that the war, we've lost that war, the drug war. It's totally lost. It's worse than it's ever been. There's more stuff coming in. Of course, the CIA is bringing it in. But, of course, the net team, the Santa Cruz net team, can't go bust
well,
the CIA.
Well, when is Scott
now,
Kennedy and Celia Scott and all these great liberals downtown on the city council going to take a stand and tell the police chief that that's not what they're interested in seeing the police department do?
Right.
The drug war should be the lowest priority, that the war on poverty, not the war on poor people, is what we want to go after here in town. I'd like to see more of that. Is there more you want to say, Bob? I got my two guests here who have been sitting around for half an hour just waiting patiently.
Well, another thing is, and then we have the Resource Center for Nonviolence, taking money from a violent...
Wait a minute, you mean the Resource Center for Scott Kennedy?
Yes, they're taking money from the Justice Department, which I've seen at the Familia Center sometimes looking for, you know, looking at illegal people. And they're taking money from them to you know, of course, they're going to ensure that, you know, that the drug war is being enforced through the Resource Center of Nonviolence and the Great White Hope, Eric Larson.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, basically the drug war is not winning. Everybody's losing in the drug war. We're all paying for it, whether you do drugs.